So tonight we are doing the final step, I suppose, in this metta course that we've been working on for the last 7 weeks. And it's metta for all beings. And the idea behind metta for all beings is that we are essentially acknowledging that we aren't separate, that we aren't alone individual, that we're all connected, and that all pieces of this vast collection called all beings deserves to be happy and safe and healthy and to live at ease. It's a big ask, shall we say. And Sharon Salzberg, of course, had some wonderful words to say about this. When we are caught in the concepts of separation, we suffer distance and alienation. We need to defend ourselves at all times because the world seems very threatening. When we experience a strong idea of separate, immutable self and other, it seems as though there's a constantly a great big other out there. To bear this danger, we need to hold ourselves in tense readiness, waiting for every impact. The legacy of separation impoverishes the spirit. Seeking only to protect ourselves, we cannot genuinely connect with others. We cannot see what needs our love, and we struggle with terrible loneliness. In trying to reach others from the stance of our isolation, we are like weary travelers preparing for a dangerous border crossing, cautiously hoping to reach a new land and make contact, secretly believing it will not be possible. Veering between fitful hope and underlying insecurity, we have no peace. Imagine the relief of discovering that there is no such border to be crossed. It is only through seeing our fundamental connection with the world that a life of true peace becomes possible. It's very precise Sharon language, of course. She points out the fact that this is where this practice leads. This is where we've been heading towards, this idea of metta for all beings. The problem with metta for all beings, now that I've told you how wonderful it is, the problem with metta for all beings is how do we grasp the meaning of all beings? Over seven, I think there's 7.5 billion people on the planet right now. And that's just people. But all beings means all beings. All the dogs and cats and worms and snakes and dolphins and fish and, beings, whatever they are. Can we somehow grok that? Take that in. What does it mean to be connected to all beings and to wish them well without exception? Spent a couple of weeks talking about forgiveness and working with the difficult people, difficult in our lives. That's to allow us to have no one left out. We can't be all beings except those five or those people or whatever. It has to be all beings. We have to be totally inclusive. This is where creativity appears in this practice. I've seen many different ways where people have talked about how to somehow or other be able to understand all beings, to take it in and be able to consciously connect to the idea of all beings. And all of these methods have one thing in common. Let somehow break down all beings into some subgroups. And so I can, if I can sort of have tune into the meaning of what this particular subgroup, and then expand and add in more subgroups somehow, and then eventually I can sort of creep up on all beings in a way. It's every method I've ever seen to deal with teachings on all beings and practicing for all beings has this layer of creative process involved in it. And there are three different forms that I've come across, some of which I connected with really strongly, and others with didn't work for me. And that's the other thing. We all find what works for us here. Some people, I'm going to talk about all three of these different sort of forms of practice. And then you can try them out over time or tonight or whatever. And then you can decide, oh, well, yeah, that's the way. That way that Barry thinks is crazy, that's the one that works suits me. And that would be perfectly fine. I don't really, I'm not sort of invested in you doing it, quote, the right way or my way. I'm just invested in you finding a way that suits you and suits your nature. So the first of these is what I'll call concentric circle practice. The idea here is we start really small with self, and then we expand that out a little bit. So on retreat or sitting in a hall with a lot of people, you'd say, now take the, including your thoughts of loving kindness, the people sitting on either side of you. So now instead of one person, there's three people. And so we're sort of making the circle of our loving kindness wishing a bit larger. And then now all the people who you could reach out and touch, the people before you, people behind you, so where you are at home, include on any beings that you're having to be living with or next door or whatever. Some give yourself some way to tune into a slightly larger group of people or group of beings. I mean, I know a lot of you have dogs and cats. They're beings. They deserve loving kindness just like anybody else. And then from there, you sort of go, okay, now everyone on my block. And then everyone in my part of town. And you sort of keep making this circle a little bigger. And one thing about this, and I've heard many people say this, is they like this because they think, okay, now everybody, when I go past my block to everybody in my neighborhood, well, I have those two friends who live over there 4 blocks away and who I really like, and they can sort of become the representatives in my mind of that part of this expanded thing. So I start to include more and more people I know just by widening the circle. And then you go from my neighborhood to everyone in this particular town or city or whatever. And then everyone in this county. And then everyone in this state. Everyone in this country. Everyone on this continent. So you just sort of keep making it larger. And of course, as you get larger and larger and larger, it's like, even if you go like everyone in this city, well, if you happen to be in Boulder like me, that's like 100,000 people or something. Not counting all those people at the university who aren't really, but if you counted all them, then it'd be like 130,000, right? And you just sort of keep making it bigger and bigger and trying to stay connected to the sense of all those beings until you have your last step is everyone, all beings. So you sort of move slowly towards it by gradually expanding your circle. I've always found this particular method really difficult. And it's just the way my mind works. I don't know. And I sort of get to the county line, and then I go, I sort of, my mind sort of starts to sort of short circuit. I know other people, I have friends who just swear this is the way to do it. And so it's not like this, that's just me and my sort of narrow look at the world somehow or other. I don't know what it is, but it's just something I always, at a certain point, I get lost. Okay, so that's method number one. Perfectly good method. The next one is what I'll call group practice. So you think of a particular group of people, and people are grouped in all kinds of different ways based on skin color, sexuality, the things they like to do, where they live, where they work. I mean, you can think of all kinds of different ways to group people together, right? And so you sort of pick a particular group and you sort of go through the phrases, 5 times, 10 times, sort of connect with all the people in that group. But then you go, ah, now what are other groups like that who I've excluded? So if I, for instance, I did all Democrats, then I'd have to then do all Republicans. And we discover where, it's really interesting because you discover where your edges are. All Democrats, oh, that's great. All Republicans, well, I'm not so sure. I'm not so comfortable with that one, And then all those independent voters, and then people who vote for third party candidates. I mean, you start being thinking about all the different ways you can break things down. It's interesting because you start to find out where your edges are. You think of a group that you like, oh, I like all that, and so it's sort of nice to sort of wish them well. But then you're thinking, well, if what are other pieces of that that make it a larger thing? When I was first taught this, one thing, this is James Barras, who was teaching at the time, said, he's a big, James is a big basketball fan. He said, you can, think of sports teams. Sports teams are groups. So that's fine. And I was like, I was going like, oh, great. So I was like, I'll definitely, come up with that one, And the thing is, you sort of come up with a set of groups until they seem you've included all the people who fit into that sort of way of thinking. And then you just start another group and go off and do something different. Like you could do politics, but then you can do sports, and then you can do a different sport, and then you can do people you've worked with in your life and people, just groups. However you want to slice and dice things. And all we're trying to do is make it more possible to sort of tune into everyone step by step. Anyhow, so when James taught this, and I was sitting there, and I'm going, oh, this is great. I'm a big ice hockey fan. And I actually used to have season tickets for the Ottawa Senators, right, back when I lived up in Canada. And it was like, this is great. May all Ottawa Senators be safe. And I said the four phrases for the Senators like 5 times, right? And it was like, oh, this is so great. Just it felt wonderful to wish them well. And but then remembering the instructions, it was like, oh, now I gotta go. May all Toronto Maple Leafs be happy. And it was like, ugh. It was like, oh no, the arch enemy, right? Now I'm wishing them well too. And it was so fascinating just to see how my mind differentiated just between this group of hockey players and this other group of hockey players who were different, who had different team allegiances. But it was like in the mind, it was like a really, it was like different, difficult. It was different. And it was like, I was so easy to wish the Senators well, to wish the Leafs well. Well, I was like, okay, I can do this, but it was like I had to struggle. Just something as simple as that. So that's where we, And we do this all the time. We pick certain groups of people, all people who meditate, all people who don't meditate, all people who only meditate once in a while. I mean, however you want to slice and dice things. And it's always interesting to see where it's easy and where it's not quite so pleasant, or sometimes darn right unpleasant. Just because in your day-to-day world, you associate that portion of this huge collective as being other. It's where we're always othering people in various ways. So that's door number two. Okay, now I have to put something in the chat here. There's the chat. So this is the traditional 12 categories that are practiced in all beings. And this, by traditional, I mean this is how I was taught, and this is like in the original texts and teachings, this is how all beings was practiced. It was by taking these 12 categories, which sort of break in various ways, break down all into smaller subgroups. And the interesting thing is, I mean, I'm actually going to go through this list so we can talk about it a little bit. But the interesting thing is, so what you do is for each of these 12 categories, you repeat all four phrases. So you can see the first one is, may all beings be safe. So in your mind, you'd say, may all beings be safe. May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings live at ease. And then you directly go on to the next one. May all living beings, etc. And you go through all 12 categories. So that means, in terms of concentration, that now you've got, not only are you keeping track of what phrase you're on, but you're keeping track of what subcategory you're on. It takes an incredible amount of concentration to sort of be able to sit there with your eyes closed, not looking at the list, and go through this series of 12 categories, all four phrases, over and over and over again. This is for if you're really interested in this metta, at least partially, because this is a concentration practice, this is where the concentration element really gets amped up. So if you're fascinated, as I am, by concentration practices, this might be something for you. And it's a different idea than the others, because it's sort of traditionally and sort of fixed in its way. It isn't like, well, it's less loose, more formal. Okay. But let's actually look at this list. So there's the first five here, right? May all beings be safe, may all living beings, may all breathing beings, may all individuals, all those in existence. It sounds like we're saying the same thing five times over. But there's like, these are like different flavors, in a sense, of all. You know, all beings, but then all living beings, well, it has a different flavor to it somehow. All breathing beings, wow, now we're excluding anything that isn't breathing. But everything breathes. But some beings, are they breathing? Are they living through osmosis somehow? It's like, what does breathing mean? All individuals and all those in existence. So this is like, it's driving home, in a sense, all the different ways we can think of all. Here's five different, slightly different definitions of all. And it's like, oh, it's like I never thought of it quite that way. And it's just, it gets you connected to the sense of all in some deeper way. And I know teachers and people who, when When they practice all beings, just use these five phrases. They skip, they don't use these other seven. It's just these five. But and they cycle through all five of them, all four phrases. So as I was saying, there's these five categories that are different flavors of the word all, essentially. But then we get down to the other seven. And the other seven are ways to sort of break down all into very large subgroups, shall we say. So the first two are, may all females be safe, may all females be happy. And then all males. This was written down 2,000 years ago. The truth is, of course, that we know that there are people who are neither male nor female, both male and female. So if you want to, if it feels more comfortable for you, you can say, and I've done this, may all females, may all males, then may all beings who are neither male nor female. But that gets to be like a lot of klutzy words. So maybe there's some other language you can use that would make you feel comfortable. And if you feel it's necessary, you can do that. And that's, so this is an adaptation that you can play with if you want. But it's interesting, just all males, all females, how I know a lot of people who have a lot easier time wishing, having thoughts of loving kindness towards one of those groups versus the other. Just as simple as males versus females. It's like, oh, well, females, I can do that, but males, I don't know. And it's like it's history and all kinds of other things. What's going on in your life? But it's like, this is when, once again, here's an edge. It's a way to explore this edge in a sense. Then the next one is, may all enlightened beings, and the opposite of may all unenlightened beings. And at first, when I thought about this, it was like, if they're enlightened, what do they need my thoughts of loving kindness for? But here's the truth. Enlightened beings still have bodies, still suffer in the world. If you look at the history of people who I think of as enlightened beings, some of them incredible physical suffering and very difficult lives in the physical world. Ramana Maharshi, who was a great Vedantin teacher in central India in the last century, ended up, he would just sit, and he was very much into silence. But he got this enormous growth on the side of his neck. And this is long before people got surgery for those sorts of things. So if you got it, you got it. And it was really painful. And he slowly, essentially choked to death over a period of 3 years or so. And he never stopped teaching. And when his students started freaking out because he was getting really close, they could tell he was close to death, and they were all getting upset. Oh, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And he said to them, I'm not going anywhere. Where could I go? He was acknowledging that he was not, wasn't separate from them in any way. That's what he experienced, despite the incredible pain he was experiencing at the same time. And there's lots of examples of teachers like this. If you start digging into that sort of literature, that all had really extremely difficult physical lives. So they all need to have thoughts of, may them be safe and happy and healthy and live at ease. It's like just that they're just like anybody else, except they happen to be enlightened. But I mean, on a physical level, they're just beings. And this sort of acknowledges that that's reality in a sense. That once you're enlightened doesn't mean you don't have a body and you don't have to deal with all the things about the body that fall apart over time. And then all unenlightened beings, well, That's the rest of us. We're including everyone else. So once again, these are like, this is ways of breaking down everyone into a smaller subsets, right? Then we found, then this last, the last group is three, and this has to do partly with traditional Eastern cosmology, you see this sort of thing in some of the suttas as well, because the Buddha was very connected to the traditional cosmology of his time. So the first one is all devas and brahmas. Devas and brahmas are basically celestial beings, and we would in our Western world call them angels or something like that. These are beings that live on a plane of existence where they're not really physical, but sort of, but they don't want for or need anything. And you're going, so why do I need to do thoughts of loving kindness for them? Well, here's the thing, they're sort of part way enlightened, right? They live in these beautiful celestial realms where everything they need is right there all the time, without them having to even think about it. They're living these lives of just like perfectly satisfied everything. And they're stuck because they never suffer, so they never understand suffering and they can't grow. And the sutta is full of stories of celestial beings of this sort coming back, coming, taking physical form, going to the Buddha for instruction. Because they had to, that was how they could grow, how they could improve, how they could grow. There's a whole section in the Samyutta Nikaya, the first section in the Samyutta Nikaya, this sutta is where some Brahma or Deva comes, takes physical form, sits with the Buddha, and gets instruction. And this is the cosmology of that culture, and also this way that Buddha interpreted what was going on, and his students interpreted, because they interpreted within the constructs of their cosmology. I'm not for one second suggesting you need to believe in that cosmology. You might want to suspend your disbelief, or you might want to think of this whole category as like, maybe they're not enlightened beings, but beings that you've met or know or are connected to that are just so far along the path compared to me. And I know beings like this. I've met, I've hung out with, teachers who were like this. I was like, this is so clear that these people are like different in some quite heartening, heart-filling way. And that might be what we think of as devas and brahmas in our culture, in our cosmology. And that would be a perfectly good way to think of it too. Then the next category is all human beings. That's all of us. So it's excluding everything and everyone that isn't human and isn't celestial. It's like all human beings. Those are the first two categories, are these celestial beings and all human beings. So it's excluding non-human beings, which is in this cosmology, in the third category. All those in lower realms. This is a very controversial statement in Boulder, where many people believe their dogs are equal to human beings, right? Or, people, well, what about the whales and the porpoises? Or what about the elephants? And you can just go make yourself crazy really quickly going there. Don't go there. It's like devas and brahmas, human beings. And if the word lower realms bothers you, it could be more like all the others. And the thinking here in the traditional texts is those beings in lower realms don't have the conscious ability to practice. Don't have consciousness in the sense that human beings have consciousness. And that's the differentiation line. Same as kind of arbitrary, but that's traditionally where that line was drawn. Human beings can practice, all those other beings, they're amazing, they're wonderful, they have amazing things they do and communicate in all kinds of ways, but they're not conscious in the sense of being able to then take up the practice. The other thing about this category, though, those beings in lower realms, is in the cosmology, there's all kinds of, they're sometimes called hell realms or realms where people really, it's really horrible. There's only one of them that I ever sort of connected to at all, or it made sense. This is called the Land of the Hungry Ghosts. So this is a lower realm where the beings have huge bodies, but their mouths are little tiny pinholes, so they can never get enough. They can never feed themselves enough. There's never enough of what they want because their mouth is so small they can't take in enough ever. To me, first of all, just the image itself is kind of interesting, and there are classical images of this, paintings of this, and statues of this, and things. But to me, this is so reminiscent of people I've known or know who are severely addicted to something. This is what it like is to be so really addicted, is to be a hungry ghost. You can never get enough. Ever. Horrible, painful existence. And so that's in a sense how I look at that. Once again, if I'm thinking of Devas and Brahmas as human beings who are extremely advanced and deeply aware, but perhaps not enlightened, then this is like the opposite. People who are just so lost in suffering because they're addicted to something. They're addicted to some substance. They're addicted to some way of being. They're addicted to acting in a certain way or having a certain set of beliefs or whatever. There's lots of ways to be addicted. It doesn't have to be a substance. That they're so deeply lost in suffering. All the time. There's never any joy. And there are lots of beings like that in this world. Sad to say, but it's true. So that's another way you can look at it. If the idea of this cosmology of different realms of existence and people, when they die, the energy goes to some other realm and all that cosmological stuff, then you don't need to go there. Just think of it in this sort of other context that I've presented, perhaps, and maybe that's makes sense. Okay, so that's it. That's the three forms. There's this concentric circle form, where we gradually widen the physical space that we're sort of taking in and grokking where we are, and including all the beings in that space, until we eventually get to all beings. There's this idea of groups where we take a group just because it's something how we think about we subdivide the world, how we chop the world into pieces all the time, which is we do. It's a normal human function almost. And then we just sort of, when we think about it, we can, start with the group we connect to in a sense, and then, but oh, what are other parts parts of this whole. I had the Senators, Maple Leafs, and then all other National Hockey League players, which was a little ridiculous. But it was like, now I have a complete group and I could move on to the next group. How doesn't really, this is where you can really feel totally free to be creative in this area. And some people like that openness and being aware that if you're going to get your edges are going to be exposed, which is very useful and interesting. And then there's this traditional, these traditional categories where you literally keep repeating the phrases like we have been, but now you do it for just the five categories or for all 12, where you have to keep track of where you are more. And so it requires a great deal of concentration. So that's all beings. And so what we're going to do now in terms of practice is I want it as all to practice just self, just for a couple of minutes to get back into the flow of the practice. And then pick any other category that you are drawn to work with. And we'll hang out there for like 5 minutes, just so we get the practice going. And then I'm going to actually go through the 12 categories, all four phrases once out loud, so you can sort of get a sense for what that's like. And then here's the other thing. The interesting thing about all beings is now those the ideas we have about what do these phrases mean, they have to be universal, because we're talking about all beings. We can't, we can't, they can't just be, well, what they mean to me or to my friend. So it's sort of a little bit like how you took the meaning of the phrases for your neutral person, but even a little more expansive. And in terms of imagining, visualizing, now that part of the practice, it's more difficult. Is how do you visualize all beings? Well, you can visualize them in some sense of, if you go through the second of those, when you're visualizing groups, I can see all of the Senators in their uniforms, with their skates on or something, So there might be ways I can visualize a little bit. But visualization is less powerful here, and it's much more the meaning of the phrases and the actual repetition of the phrases that takes over. I think I'm gonna just open the floor just in case there's any questions. I've just said an awful lot. Are there any questions about what I've said before we actually leap into the practice of all beings? Everybody's just ready to practice. Okay. So if you're listening to this recording at home, at this point, you should just start with self. A couple of minutes there, 5 minutes with the category you've chosen to work with because it draws you at this moment, and then do all beings practice in one of the ways I've described. We're going to actually, at some point, I'm going to go through all 12 categories, all four phrases, but I probably won't record that. So, finding your comfortable seated position. Tune into that sense of self, or however it is you connect to self. Tune into what those phrases mean for you. Use that individual self for now. And then just start repeating the phrases. I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. may live with ease again. There is one other thing I want to say about practicing for all beings. There's been times in my life, situations in my life where I found myself both glorious and scary, where it seemed like this is what I needed to do in that moment. I had to sort of, the only thing I could do is connect to this energy for all beings and radiate it out into the world around me, given the situation I was in at that moment. And I found it very helpful. Just that. It's and I can't tell you what I mean beyond that in terms of, well, what kind of situation are you talking about? Because it's all different for all of us. But we all find ourselves in situations sometimes where, oh my God, what the heck's going on here? And at that point, it might, this is what might be really useful, because it calms you and connects you to everyone around you. And at some level, people will feel that, and maybe it'll help them stay calm too. It's just a thought. Other than that, I want to just sort of, here we are at the end of this course, open the floor one more time to anything anyone has to share or say, or questions you might have to ask about the practice in the broadest sense of the word, or about what we did tonight, or what was it like practicing for all beings for you tonight? So, as always, just if you feel like speaking, just turn on your mic and go from there.
I have a comment and then a question. So, I found the grouping really meaningful. So, like, I find that I can, if I can, like, kind of abstract away what a human is, it's really easy for me to wish loving kindness among all beings. And, like, I can feel very joyful and peaceful doing that. And it feels very good. But I'm abstracting away all of the complexities of what different types of people are when I do that. And I found the grouping really helpful because I was really focusing on what, based on how I was grouping things, of course, like what it meant for that group of people to be happy. And I felt like I was changing my heart mind a little bit more that way. So I found that really helpful.
Excellent practice.
My question is, I'm curious how to do this more. So I guess, like, it's pretty obvious to me that I can, make my daily practice metta. But I feel like in formal teachings, it's a little bit like of an exception rather than like the common thing that is taught. So like both with like day-long retreats, for example, like it would say like more often than not, it's not like a metta-focused practice. And like I understand the benefit of experimenting, but I also realize that it's not all the time that I go and have like a daily sit, you know what I mean? Like a day-long sit is what I mean. So I'm just curious what you think about like how to incorporate metta like more solidly into like the meditation lifestyle that I have.
Sure. Well, certainly I've spent time, lots of times, where this is where metta has been my daily practice. That's what I've done for months at a time sometimes. And I found that very useful, because it helps me connect into that sense of all beings more over time. Beyond that, think of all of the, it's just like, we talk about, when we were talking about mindfulness, I know I've talked about this, think of certain situations you come into all the time. I don't know what you do for work, but maybe You go every time you go into a meeting at work, just have thoughts of well-being for everyone in the meeting. At the beginning, just say the phrases once or twice for everyone who's in the room with you, or in the Zoom room for you, if maybe your meetings are online these days, like most people, or whatever. Just whatever you can think of situations where it would be a cue. Oh, I should just do a little bit of, a little bit of metta practice in this situation. Those things I suggested, like there you are in the grocery line at the store, and you can go, oh, look, there's three other people ahead of me, and there's that person. Oh, let's just do thoughts of loving kindness for these four total random strangers. I mean, these are like, this is like meta for the neutral person because you don't know any of these people that are just there. But you can just see what it's like to have thoughts of loving kindness for them, as opposed to standing there looking at the cover of the strange magazine. It's in the in the magazine rack about whatever it is. Just consciously find ways and situations where you can form the intention, when I'm fine in this sort of situation in my daily life, just going about living, when I can pause and have thoughts of consciously choose to have thoughts of loving kindness for the people around me. Other than that, I can't suggest anything. It's just because that's really this the daily practice. You did mention day longs, and I know you've come to some of my day longs, and most of my day longs. So I'm going to do a metta day long again next in January, I think. It's okay when you're on some sort of like meditation retreat, and the teacher's talking and teaching one form of practice, to sort of take in those teachings, but then practice metta instead. I did a whole month retreat that was theoretically a retreat for mindfulness, and the whole retreat I practiced metta the whole time. This is perfectly, I mean, you're sitting there, your eyes are closed, you're sitting there quietly. Who the hell, how the hell do I know what you're doing, You're practicing what feels right for you at the time. And that's perfectly okay practice.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay. Other comments, other questions, other thoughts?
Thank you, Barry. It's been an interesting few weeks. I don't generally use go through the whole list categories.
When I practice all beings, that's the form I particularly have found works for me. And I go through the, though, as I said, there are some people who use just the first five. I also have had some people say they don't like the first five because it's too general, and they use just the last seven. Everybody finds it works for them. So if you can, feel free to experiment and see what resonates more. For me, it's the 12 categories. And partly I'm just kind of a traditional guy, I think, and I like, and I'm also really interested in the concentration aspects of the practice. And to keep all 12 categories, all four phrases going, makes you really concentrate. It's quite a powerful concentration practice. That's just me.
It's helpful. I incorporate metta practice, but in a shortened version usually when I'm having some kind of difficulty. When I'm upset or something, I'll use metta practice for myself as a reminder to be nice to myself or kind to myself. It's a good, and also I'll you often use it for a difficult person. It helps me detach a little bit, or but I don't often go through the all the categories But maybe that might be valuable too as a, you know, as a daily practice for a while, but I don't usually do that. I shorten it to just those generally as a practical sense of kind of changing the channel or disconnecting with or being kind to myself. Because I can, you
Self-compassion.
know, as most of us can, I can be really hard on myself sometimes, and it's a good reminder that it's, you know, anyway.
Everybody, the thing about metta that I just know more than anything else is everybody finds the way that suits them. The only thing we have to watch for, and this is maybe a little yellow warning flag waving for you from what you just said, is we have to be careful that we don't turn this metta practice into something I do when I want something. And we have to be, and it doesn't sound like that to me, but it could tend that way if you weren't careful. I want to calm down, so I'm going to do metta. And so we have to sort of be a little aware of not getting caught in the wanting the near enemy. Other than that, sounds fine to me.
Yeah, that's a valuable reminder. Yeah, thank you.
Anyone else will have anything they want to say tonight? I exhausted you all. I, of course, have a piece of poetry to finish with. Oh, Deborah, go ahead.
I have used it with political figures. The ones who I have that immediate clenching every time I see them or hear them, or and also, don't know, perpetrators of violence. Not, and it does diffuse some of that immediate tightening. And it, who knows if it has any larger effect, but it certainly can help me from clenching every time I encounter them.
And it's also like the interesting thing about that is you're also acknowledging that they're human beings who deserve to be happy, despite whatever it is they happen to be doing that makes us crazy. That's what how I've been working with a certain political figure for like 9 years now. I would say anything else, but that's, sometimes that's all we can do, and reminds us over and over again, oh, this is just how this person tries to make themselves happy, and it's unskillful. At least from my point of view, it's unskillful, and I'm reactive to that. So here's a way to sort of not get caught in those reactions. It's like there's that sutta where the Buddha gives five ways to not to just sort of dissipate unwholesome thoughts, and metta, going to some other concentrative form of practice, like metta, is one of those ways, and that's can be quite skillful. So, sounds good to me. So, this is from Mary Oliver's book, Evidence. And it's just the last three sections of a much longer poem. I'm not going to read the whole poem, called To Begin With the Sweet Grass. And this is just the last three sections of this poem. We do one thing or another. We stay the same or we change. Congratulations if you have changed. Let me ask you this. Do you think that beauty exists for some fabulous reason? And if you have not been enchanted by this adventure, your life, what would do for you? It's an interesting question to ask ourselves. If I'm not like stunned and amazed by the fact that I have this life and I'm living it. What do you need? And then she goes on. This last section is one of my favorite things she ever wrote. What I loved in the beginning, I think, was mostly myself. Never mind that I had to, since somebody had to. That was many years ago. Since then, I've gone out of my confinements, though with difficulty. I mean the ones that thought to rule my heart. I cast them out. I put them on the mush pile. They will be nourishment somehow. Everything is nourishment somehow or another. And I have become a child of the clouds and of hope. I have become a friend of the enemy, whoever that is. I have become older, and cherishing what I have learned, I have become younger. And what do I risk to tell you this, which is all I know? Love yourself, then forget it, then love the world. Mary Oliver and Metta, as far as I'm concerned. May the beneficial energies arising from our practice here together today become the causes and conditions for the end of suffering and the awakening of all beings everywhere.